Before we begin, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Help me carry your message today. Amen.
Thank you, Mike.
We have some new people here. We have three meetings. Tomorrow night at 6. Chiefs are at 7:20, so you can TiVo it. We will stop right at 7 so everybody can come. There are priorities. Wednesday night at 7:30. Tomorrow night we're covering, if we're different parts of the book, tomorrow night we're going to be reading the Jay Walker and Fred and the queer mental twist that makes me defenseless against the first drink forever, and how we're going to have to find a defense and it can't come from me. On Wednesday night, we are going to cover the fifth step promises and the results of the fifth step. That's where we are in the book. And today we're on working with others. Last Saturday marked 12 years of beginning of our 12th year. I don't know how you calculate, but I did go to college, but I had trouble figuring it out. But it's 12 years that we started Saturday. I had trouble describing how I felt, and we're going to actually read it tonight and working with others. I did a special meeting last Saturday. Patty's going to put a PDF together of what was on the handout, so it'll be on the site. But she won't be doing it this week. It'll be a week or so until she gets that done. She's going to be babysitting grandkids next week. Today we're reaching a special part of the book on Saturdays. We've covered up to page 88, step 11. We have spent quite a deal of time on that. We did some, we looked at the steps we took and carried this message on step 11 and 10. And now we're ready to look at working with others. Then we will go through to wives, family afterwards, to employers, and a vision for you. And we covered Dr. Bob's nightmare. I'm going to do that again. That was great. And I did the acceptance is the answer chapter, and then we'll be done with the book again. Working with others. And it doesn't say what you're working with others, but you're working it. Remember how it works? Well, you're working it with somebody else. You're working the steps. It's more than just service. It's working the path together with the new man. Because in this chapter it says, you and the new man will walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. I heard something that Sandy Beach said. He said so many great things. He was one of the people God put in my life. And I've used a lot of his material when I do these meetings. In fact, most of the stuff I say, none of it really came from me. From everybody else I've listened to, and that's how the big book is written too. It's from everybody else. But he said the greatest gift you can give anyone in AA is to help them have a spiritual awakening. You can't do it for them, but if you can help them down the path and see their spiritual awakening, they awaken to a power within themselves. So I have to work it with others. And it is the program of recovery. And these pages we're going to read today have so much information in it, and it applies to new and old. And it shows you how things were in 1939 when they wrote this book. There were only 70 or 80 people sober at the time. There were three groups, one in Akron, one in New York, and one in Cleveland. They called themselves a variety of different things, but they took the name Alcoholics Anonymous, the Cleveland group, from the book. And that's how we got the name of the groups. The book was named Alcoholics Anonymous. Some guy came to a meeting and they couldn't figure out what to name the book. They were going to call it The Way Out, but there were too many ways out in the Library of Congress. And they were going to call it The James Club, but they thought that might be too religious. And then somebody came to the meeting and said, call them Anonymous Alcoholics. And they liked that, because it shows the humility that we all need to get sober and recover. None of us speak for AA. We're all in it together. It says practical experience. So what is an experience? We talk about that a lot. It's a observation of facts and events as a basis of knowledge. It's what's produced by your observation of facts and events, and then a basis of knowledge of that, of what's happened. And it's your experience. You can't argue with anyone's experience. Now in AA, there's a lot of people argue with people's experience, but it's their experience. And this book is their experience. You may not like it. You may not think you need it. AA doesn't care, really. They don't say in the beginning, we hope you like this and you'll approve of us. They just say that we were dying and this is what we did. And they say in the first paragraph of the big book in the introduction that if you're dying of a hopeless condition of mind and body, this is what we did. And you might want to do this. So practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity. Immunity is protection or exemption from something. It doesn't mean that it's gone, you're just protected. You're in an immune state. People used to get vaccines. They still do, I guess. I'm retired now, I don't know much medicine. But when I was a kid, you used to have the vaccine and then the booster vaccine, because the initial vaccine would produce a certain amount of antibodies and protection, but it would wear off. So you had to have a booster. And so the immunity doesn't mean cure. It means you're protected or exempt from something. Immunity from drinking. And what they're really talking about is immunity in your mind from taking the first drink, right? Anybody think that's important? Because that's what kills us, right? Our mind sober tells us that we can drink. Anybody have that happen?
No.
Anybody take a drink sober? We all did, right? And we knew it was bad. But we didn't know it was bad right before we did it. So how'd that happen? We knew it was bad at 9 o'clock. At 9:30, it's making sense. And Norm's not here today, but when we talked about it, he said we drink on a lie. We're not immune from the thought that alcohol is okay. And so we need to be immune from that. And it's immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Now, they're not talking about gardening together or cleaning the house together. They're talking about intensive work with each other to do what? To have a relationship with God. That's the whole deal. This book is all about knowledge of God, a relationship with God that works, that will change the way you live, change the way you think and act, and produce a different way of life. Anybody agree with that? It's quoted a lot. And why would it produce immunity from the idea that it's okay to drink by intensive work with another alcoholic? Because if you're working with somebody else, you're thinking of them and not yourself. And the more you think of other people, the less you're thinking of yourself. And the less I think of about myself, the better my days go. I think there's a direct correlation. The more I'm out of myself thinking of others, the better my days go. Think about that in your day-to-day. Think about when you're thinking about yourself, it's doing about something. And you get disturbed versus not. It says it works when other activities fail. And so I wrote, you work it, how it works. It works. The process works. The action works when other activities fail. And remember, this is what Bill W. thought of in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel on May 13th, 1935 at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I made that up. I don't know what time. Might have been 2:30. Somebody's going to call me on the site and say it was 2:15. You know. But something happened to him. He was alone in Akron. His business deal had gone through. He was sober 6 months. And he thought he'd go in the bar and listen to some music. What do you think of that one? And he thought he would just stay there for a while. He didn't have any money. He didn't know how he was going to pay the bill. The business deal went through that was going to make him a success. I think if the business deal had gone through and Bill became a success, we may not have been here. But God had a plan. And so Bill, as he's crossing the threshold, he thought maybe a drink. And then here's what God did to him. He shook him. He shivered. He froze. He shivered with fear. God said, bad idea, Billy. Bad idea. And he remembered that his wife told him that when he worked with other alcoholics, he may not have helped any of them, but he was sober. And he turned away from the bar to thoughts of others. And I think that's the whole AA deal. Just in that one scene. And then he went down to the end of the hall. He wanted to find an alcoholic to talk to. He eventually found Dr. Bob. Of course, Dr. Bob was passed out drunk on the floor of his house, so they couldn't meet that night. They met the next night, and we're here today. Tell me that's not the hand of God. And it says on page 84, when you're stewing about yourself, you watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear all day long, right? And it says, what do? You discuss it with someone, you forgive right away, you make amends. And it says you turn your thoughts to someone you can help. Get out of yourself. So if anything's bothering you today, the treatment for that is to get out of yourself. And we're lucky in AA because there's always somebody you can call. I've got a million numbers I can call and ask people how they're doing. Get out of yourself. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Now notice 12 suggestions in squiggly writing. This is like the parachute suggested if you jump out of the airplane. And in fact, it's even suggested that you pull the string. You know, alcoholics will jump out of the plane, but they say, well, I don't know if I could pull the string. I mean, who knows? It's not a good idea. I don't want to pull the string, blah, blah, blah. You've heard it all. Anyway, this is the 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. Jimmy liked that one. And so what is the message? See, it gets very confusing. The message is the steps. And the message is everything that's up to page 88. Carry this message to other alcoholics. In fact, in the original manuscript for step 12, it said having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. Now they took that out and they said alcoholics, but this message can be carried to anyone. This is the spiritual principles that are found in the scriptures. This is the spiritual principles of how you live a God-centered life. So if you don't have the message, you can't carry it. You get it? Now I heard somebody new said, if you don't have the message, how can you help a new person? Well, you can drive them to somewhere where they can hear it. You see, there, you can take people to the message. Hopefully, that's what the meetings are. Hopefully, that's what this meeting is. We're trying to carry the message in the book to people so they can do it and carry it to someone else. You can help when no one else can. Do you believe that? Absolutely. Why? He tells you, you can secure their confidence with others fail. Remember, Dr. Bob didn't want to meet Bill. He had no hope in his life, Dr. Bob, but he would give Bill, he said, I'll give him 10 minutes. You know how we are. You know, we're dying. he's so busy, but he'll give Bill 10 minutes. But then Bill talked his language and explained his alcoholism by describing his alcoholism. And he could see himself in Bill W. And I had somebody, I told him yesterday, read Bill's story and look at the similarities between you and Bill W. and how you think, how you act, how you drank. And you can secure their confidence, because Bill obviously was doing better than Dr. Bob that day. And he had what Dr. Bob had, so Dr. Bob wanted to know what he did. And isn't that what we're supposed to do? That's why birthdays are important, celebrating what's happened in our lives. Remember, they are very ill. I need to remember that. I need to remember that I'm ill. We're all spiritually ill. We never get perfect here, and some are sicker than others. And what do we mean by that? Well, they're just in their untreated alcoholism more than they haven't had treatment yet. They don't understand their thinking and their resentments and their fears. They're not bad people, they're ill. And remember, when you're angry, it says, how do you get free of anger at someone? You look at them from a different angle, that perhaps they're spiritually ill, just like I am. That means that they're human beings, and we have to be considerate of how they are. Now, is there anybody in AA that's ever bothered you? No, I'm the only one? I'm bothering somebody right now, so get over it. But here's the deal. They're just human beings. And it says four prayers. Practice love, patience, and tolerance, for they are as you would a sick friend. Give everybody love, patience, tolerance, kindness, consideration. How can you be helpful to someone? God save me from being angry. How can you be angry at somebody who's not well? And give me a kind and tolerant view of everyone. If you do that all the time, your days are going to be great. Remember, they're very ill. Now, here's what's happened to me by doing the meetings. Life has taken on a new meaning. I mean, I really have been so blessed by being able to be here and share with the people who've come. They've helped me so much. And life has taken on a new meaning. I have a new focus. 3 days a week, I have something I have to do. I want to do it. I have to prepare. I have to turn my thoughts to what's the message going to be. It gets me out of me. And it says, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. And to me, that's what it's been all about, my journey in AA. I see people in the room, I remember when they came in, and now I see them working with other people before the meeting, and then I see those people working with someone else. And you can see the change, you can see the happiness, you can see it in their eyes. This, and we have a fellowship that's grown up around us. and this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Now, it doesn't say the newcomer is the most important. I've heard that a lot. I don't know where that comes from. It may be true, it may not. But newcomers are an opportunity to carry the message. And they're an opportunity for you to find someone that you can walk down the path. And it also says with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Here's another one. Perhaps you're not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. Now that's the key. Don't assume people want to recover. Because you meet somebody in AA, they may not want to recover. We don't know why they're here. And so I always assume they want to recover. But sometimes they don't. They're here for a variety of reasons. They don't even know what recover means. What does recover actually mean? Recover means that I'm in a position of neutrality towards alcohol. That I've had a change in the way I see things. I have a power in my life that I can go to when I get angry or fearful or bothered. And so, and I wrote, recovered is the action to obtain a relationship with and knowledge of your Creator, which gives you a power to live. So I'll say that again. It's the action to obtain a relationship with and knowledge of your Creator, which gives you a power to live. And that's what they say we need on page 45. You can easily find some. Now, when this was written, there was no AA. Now, they thought that everybody would want this book when they published it. They sold shares to get the money to do the book, and they called it Works Publishing, from Faith Without Works is Dead, from the book of James, because they studied it. And they sold shares for $25 to get the money to put the book together. And then they made the book really big and bright so that everybody would want it, because they were marketing. Bill was a marketing guy. And they charged more for this book than they did for Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind, 1939, was the most popular book ever sold. Then they made that movie. And then so they thought, how are we going to get this out? Because there wasn't Amazon, you know, and all this. You know what they did? They sent it to doctors. They sent it to doctors, and they wanted them to buy it for their patients. Now, I don't know if this is a true story, but this is what Joe and Charlie told me. And they said it, and they got 5 replies from 1,000, and they were from doctors' wives who wanted the books for their husbands. So the sales didn't go initially, but you know, God had a plan, and eventually they did the Rockefeller dinner, and the book, and there were some articles written in the Saturday Evening Post, and the book, they sold 8,000 copies within a couple years, and then we were off and running. It says you can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will only be too glad to assist you. Now you don't have to worry. People come here. You can find a lot of people to help. And I think one of the shortages of people who want to actually sponsor and want to reach out and actually work with other people. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. I do that sometimes. Because we love what we have, so we want to give it away. So we're so excited about giving it away. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists, much less nowadays, because this book was written. But before the book was written, they thought we were just stupid. We were stupid, ill people, dishonest, drank, did stupid things, wouldn't listen, wouldn't change. But they didn't understand that we were powerless to do that. It says, unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists, much less today. There was a lot of prejudice when I came into AA between the alcoholics and the addicts. Oh my God, we have an addict in the room. He's gonna poison us. I went to a meeting at Mandino's, and some young man came, and he had a year, and he was an addict, and he'd gotten a ride. He'd hitchhiked to come to the meeting. He wanted to get his coin. And this one lady said, this is a closed meeting. You can't be here. You're threatening my sobriety. I still remember that meeting at Mandino's. And you see how crazy? I call those AA Pharisees. It says we have alcoholic addiction. We want everybody to be welcome here. One thing we should always do is make this a place of love, a place where people are accepted. Really, we were all dying when we came in here. How would you want to be treated when you came in here? And it says you will be handicapped if ministers and doctors are competent. And you can learn much from them if you wish, but it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. And I found that the medical profession means well, but they have no idea about alcoholism. They're just so happy when the alcoholic tells them when they get admitted that they're going to quit. Everybody's happy. He's going to quit, so, you know, his cirrhosis and all this, it's going to happen. We're all excited, and they don't understand that the chances of that happening are pretty low. But they're all happy, and they write in the chart, he's going to quit drinking. Of course, because they want everybody to get better. but they don't understand how powerless we are. So I love this. So cooperate, never criticize. Anybody do that? To be helpful is our only aim. Isn't that a powerful spiritual message? And of course we do criticize and we do gossip and we do that. We shouldn't do that. We have to watch ourselves. I have to watch it. To be helpful is our only aim. It doesn't say to who, does it? Helpful to everybody. What's our job? Remember, we have a job. We sign a contract with God. Anybody remember that in the third step? That I sign a contract with God and my job is to serve God, play the role He assigns, and stay close to Him. Remember? And then God will give me everything I need. Anybody think that's a good contract? Yeah. Right. So I need to be helpful to all of His children all the time. And isn't that basically love your neighbor as yourself and love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and might? When you discover a prospect for AA, find out all you can about him. See, it was a different world then. They were asked to go see the alcoholic by the family because there wasn't a lot of meetings. They would hear about it. They would go, they call Dr. Bob. Somebody would go over and say, you know, my husband's a mess. Can you go and visit with him and Bill and this and that? It word of mouth in the beginning. So they would go out and they would actually meet the family and then they would meet the guy. And so they really got to know people. And I think one of the mistakes I've made is you need to get to know the person before you start. They need to know about you and what your problem is, my problem, and I need to know about them, where they're from, what their life's been like, what's happened. Just so you get that bond. And you start with the relationship. And then you build from that relationship to go down the path. Now here's one. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. I need to read that again. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil later opportunity. One of the mistakes I made is I always, you know, in my practice, I was a doctor, so I really wanted to help people. I mean, they were my patients, but in AA, they're not my patients. I have to remember that. They're just fellow people with the same peril, and if they don't want it, I'm not their doctor. I'm just their fellow human being, and Mark has to remind me of that, my wife sometimes, because I want people to get better. Don't you? When you work with a new person, don't you want to see them get better? Don't you want to help them? And so we do, but we have to set boundaries because we can't make them willing, right? We can't make them desperate. We can't make them do the deal. Now, how do you know if somebody doesn't want to stop drinking? Well, one, they'll tell you sometimes. But two, they won't do what you ask. So I had a suggestion. I'm going to try to follow it. Somebody was talking to me. When you meet a new person, give them one simple assignment and see if they can do it. It could be something as complicated as call me tomorrow and see if they'll do it. Now, you'd be surprised how hard it is for alcoholics to understand that. They'll say, now, what does he mean? Call me tomorrow. So 2 days later, you'll say, why didn't you call me? They'll say, well, I didn't know what you meant. I mean, or say, read a page. Just read one page. And then when you're done, call me. But we're laughing. But remember, it starts with willingness, and you just have to try to lead them to get them to listen to somebody besides them. And I have to be willing to listen to somebody besides me all the time. It says, if there's any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually the wife. We don't sometimes do that, but sometimes the wives call us first. You know, we hear about them, and that's happened. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, his religious leaning. So I made this like a five steps. I have to, when I meet somebody, I need to have an idea of what his behavior has been like, what he sees as his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. That's how you can make a list, and you can say, well, tell me how's been going. What do you think your problem is? You know, how old are you? Were you married? Did you have kids? Have you gone to school? Are you working? Where are you living? You know, get to know them. You need this information to put yourself in his place to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. It's another thing we have to remember. Sometimes it's wise to wait till he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it's better to risk it. My sponsor, Cliff, when he would see people just fighting this, and he'd say, get him more booze. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't, Jim knew Cliff, he wasn't being mean. He was just saying they're not ready yet. Yeah, now, alcohol will bring you to your knees. So sometimes they just need to drink or use a little more. The sad thing is nowadays with the drugs, people die. Mm-hmm. With alcohol, it takes a long time to get cirrhosis. And I guess you can get drink fatal alcohol levels, but it's not common. But now when you mix the drugs, and we've just had so many tragic examples of that lately, people, people die young now. It says, don't deal with him when he's very drunk. Unless, so when somebody calls you and says their husband's drunk, you don't need to run over there. You could say, well, call us in the morning. Let me know when they're, you know, he gets up and see if he's ready. Wait for the end of a spree or at least for a lucid interval. Because there's nothing you can do when you go over if somebody's drunk unless they want to go to detox. Unless they want help, they need to be detoxed. You need to drive them to the hospital or to the treatment center. Reading doctor's opinion to somebody who's drunk is not going to do it. I'm being facetious, but I'm serious. Sometimes the best thing you can do is if somebody's in bad shape, get them to the hospital, because you can die from DTs. And alcohol withdrawal is really serious. So get them to the help they need. Never refuse to do that. Sometimes they fight to get in the car. Just throw them in there. And then let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so. Now that's a good question. Dr. Bob used to ask people, are you done for good? Are you done for good? He didn't say, are you going to not drink today? Are you done for good? What he's asking them, are they defeated in here? Have they taken that first step in their heart, that surrender that was talked about, that complete defeat in here, that you can't fix this, that your life is overwhelmingly out of control and there's nothing, you've tried everything and you just give up. Now, if you really do that, you have such a sense of relief. It's hard to describe when you finally do that. So I think I babbled a lot, so we didn't get very far. It said, I'm just going to finish the paragraph. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. There's the word again, recovered. Someone who's worked the steps. Remember I had that chart last week of the old timers and the newcomer. The old timers are just people who've worked the steps. It's not how long you've been sober. And you're described as one of a fellowship who is part of their own recovery, try to help others, and who will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. And we'll pick up with that next week. I don't know, but it's just in two pages. There's so much information here on really what the whole deal's all about. So thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow night. We're going to do Jay Walker and Fred. People may not know what I'm talking about. Come tomorrow night. These are the most powerful pages in the big book. Thank you.